I'd like to welcome everybody here this morning. A lot of people here today, a lot of our college students are back. It's good to see everybody. David Smitherman is out of town. Most of you probably know this. He had some cancer at one point and got over it. So he goes to MD Anderson every once in a while to get that checked up on, and he called me and told me that he got a good report, so that's great news. And he also likes to spend time while he's on in that part of the country visiting with Mamie, his deceased wife's sister. So that's where he is, and that's why I'm up here this morning. The introduction to it anyway, is found in the book of Hebrews. And the Hebrew letter is a letter that's written to Christians of a Jewish background who were considering going back into Judaism, forsaking Christianity and becoming Jews again, for whatever the reason. That's what the letter's about. And in this letter, then, there's a lot of things that are stated telling them why they shouldn't do that. And so I challenge you then, to, if you haven't studied Hebrews in a while, it'd be a good read for you, because it does have application for us today as well. One of the ways that it encourages these Christians not to fall back into it is found in chapter 11. Many of you will recognize that as a chapter that's based upon faith, and that's what our lesson is about today, is upon faith. And in chapter 10, in verse 32, he called to their remembrance everything that they'd suffered for as Christians. And the great works that they had done. But then in verse 36, he charges them with this. He says, "For you have need of patience, that having done the will of God, you may receive the promise." Sometimes it takes patience to reap the reward. In verse 39 then, "But we are not of them that shrink back unto perdition, that turn back to the old ways, but of them that have faith unto the saving of the soul." And that's what it's about for us, right? That's why we're here today. Because we believe in God, we believe in Jesus Christ, we believe in eternity. And if we want our soul to be saved, it's going to require some patience. Then in chapter 11, definition of faith. "Now faith is assurance of things hoped for, a conviction of things not seen. For therein the elders had witness borne to them. By faith we understand that the worlds have been framed by the word of God, and not by something called evolution. So that what is seen hath not been made out of things which appear." And so then this chapter 11 then identifies different characters of the Old Testament and what their manifestation of faith was. And then at the end of chapter 11, or chapter 12, "Therefore let us also, seeing we are encompassed with such a great cloud of witnesses, lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us, and let us run with patience," there's that word again, patience, "the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith." So we're going to look at faith this morning. And we're going to look at faith in the character of somebody we read of in the Old Testament named Joseph. Many of you will recognize who Joseph is. His father was named Jacob. His mother was Rachel. Jacob, by the way, had children by four wives, or two wives and two concubines. He had a wife named Leah, where he had a lot of sons by Leah. And then in his old age, had sons by the woman that he really, really loved, Rachel. And then he had four sons by some women who were called concubines. That's not something we're very familiar with today, but they had a lot of the status of being a wife, but they were not wives. They were something less than a wife. But Jacob had 12 sons by these four women. And Joseph was the second youngest of all the sons. And the youngest was Benjamin. I want you to think about that for a minute. when you've got some older brothers, some brothers that are almost like uncles, that were older than you, and the things that might go on in a family sibling rivalry, where maybe you're the son of the favorite wife, or you're a son of a woman who's not quite a wife, and what effect that might have on the dynamics in a family, and especially if they sense that there's any form of favoritism in that family. Now, we don't have concubines and multiple wives today, but in a lot of our families, because of marriage and divorce and remarriage, you have a lot of mixed families. So this is going to be relevant to us in our society today, because we do have a lot of so-called mixed families, whether for good reasons or bad reasons. It's a fact. That's what exists in the world today. So we're going to, first of all, look at the early years of Joseph. And this is found in Genesis chapter 37, beginning in verses 1 and 2. And we know this, that Jacob is a fellow that is involved in agriculture. He had a lot of herds of sheep and goats, animals like that. And so Joseph is out, and he's 17 years old. The text identifies this for us. He's 17 years old, and he was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, the two concubines. Doesn't mention them by name, but we know that it's Dan and Naphtali and Gad and Asher. And he brought their father a bad report about them. So something going on in the herding of sheep. And so this second youngest son, who's probably a lot younger than these four brothers, goes and tells on them. Okay? How would that go in your family? I know how it has gone in my family. If I get told on for something, I'm not very happy about that. And they weren't happy either. And in fact, they were so unhappy that their emotions could really described in the text by hatred. They'd learned to hate their brother. There's probably a lot that happened that's not revealed in the text. Because what we see in younger brothers, he hasn't learned to be a younger brother yet and be in subjection to the older brother. I've got a younger brother that succeeded well in life, and he's a great negotiator. And it said because younger brothers have to negotiate everything, and older brothers don't. So I can see this in this family. And so Joseph brings a bad report, tells on his brothers. Then we continue. Now, Jacob, or Israel, loved Joseph more than any of his other sons. Had 12 of them, and this is the boy that he loved the best. And you know, it's okay, I suppose, maybe to love one over the others, but it may not be the best thing to demonstrate that and show that in your actions. And we'll find out why as we read on. It says the reason for that was because he had been born to him in his old age. And I want to suggest to you, and we won't get into a lot of detail about this, that Jacob was about 86 years old when he had Joseph. And so he was born to him in his old age, and he made a richly ornamented robe for him, and when his the coat of many colors. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. So you can imagine, you've got these 11, probably 10 brothers. Probably Benjamin didn't say anything bad to him, but they didn't say anything nice to him because they were jealous of the father's love for him. And I'll tell you this, most of us as parents know this, that we shouldn't elevate one son above the other, because it can cause jealousy and it can cause hatred. And I got a feeling that Jacob knew that. But he's 86 years old right now, or about 86. And sometimes when you get older, you don't think like you used to think. As Julie and I have elderly parents, and we deal with elderly people, they just don't think the way they used to think. So I think about Jacob being 86 years old and loving this son, because it was a son not only born of him in his old age, but born to him of the wife that he loved the most, Rachel. So they hated him, could not say a kind word to him. Now, then Joseph, to compound the problem, had some dreams that he felt like he had to share with his brothers. And the first dream was of sheaves of grain that they would gather up. And he tells his brothers this dream. And he said, "We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf arose and stood upright, while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it." And his brothers said, "Do you intend to reign over us? Is that what you're telling us? Will you actually rule us?" And remember, he's the second younger son. And in Jewish culture, who was the son that received a double portion of the inheritance? It was the oldest son. So they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Then Joseph has another dream. And he told his brothers, "Listen, I had another dream. This time the sun and moon," his father and his mother, "and the 11 stars," his brothers, "were bowing down to me." When he told his father as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. So he's got these dreams. He's compounding his problems with his older brothers. He's a lot younger than them, and he's not the eldest son, and yet he's elevating himself through the repetition of these dreams to be in that sort of position. And they don't like it. They don't like it one bit. And so we get to the point then that the application for us is that we can see what has happened, maybe perhaps through some actions that Joseph, who's a little wiser, shouldn't have repeated these things, but through the favoritism that his father showed. So favoritism, a lot of times, breeds hatred and jealousy, and in all of our relationships, that could be the case, right? In our work relationships, if we perceive that the employer likes somebody else better for no apparent reason, we're not going to like that. In our family relationships, we see that. In congregations of the Lord's people, if we sense that there's some sort of favoritism going on, that doesn't make us happy. So that's an important lesson, I think, for us. And so we know this, that we shouldn't be showing favoritism because of the discord that it could breed. But what happens then when we're not the favorite? How should we act when we're not the favorite? We know how the brothers acted. They showed jealousy. They showed hatred. But in all of our relationships, and certainly this has happened to me when I realized that in some relationship, I'm not the favorite. And so how do you act in that situation? And I think the key to it is that we just still do the best that we can. And sometimes a person is a favorite because they're very glib, and perhaps in their speech they communicate really well. Maybe it's their features. Maybe they got a winning smile. Maybe it's their personality that makes them the favorite. And the reality is that we can't help how we're put together, right? We are who we are. We've recently hired a new associate. I know there's visitors here in the office, in the building. I'm a veterinarian. And so we've hired a part-time veterinarian, and I'm really impressed with her knowledge level. She really makes our practice a better place. She received a Google review from another clinic from a client at another clinic. Could have been our clinic, but it wasn't. And it was a bad Google review. Thought that she was rude and condescending. And she was hurt by that. And she says, "I know this about myself, that I'm not the best one as far as social skills in an exam room. Her medicine is impeccable. It's really, really good, really high level." And she knows that she's not the best. And so she shared this with me. And I could tell that for all her confidence and her knowledge level, that she was sensitive about it. And I told her, I said, "This says more about this person than it says about you." I said, "You realize this, that your social skills are not the greatest. You can't help that. That's who you are. And somebody else may have some better social skills, and somebody else may look better and have a better smile and a better personality, but you are who you are, and all you can do is the best that you can do. You practice high-level medicine. There may be some things that you can work on, but don't be hurt by comments like this." That's the deal with favoritism. A lot of times we play favorites because of attributes that somebody has no power over. And certainly these brothers were not the brothers, the sons, that were born of an old man by a favorite wife. Some of them were born by concubines, by lesser wives. They can't help that. So we can't show favoritism, and we've got to, and when favoritism is shown, we can't let it hurt us and kill us and make it so that we're despondent, happy people, or even revert to hatred, which could lead to what it almost led to, was the death and the killing of their brother. So we see that. And then we see in Genesis chapter 13, verse 12, that Jacob sends Joseph to check on his brothers. It's the nature of shepherds that you move your flock from one area to another. And so Joseph goes where he'd last heard word, where they were, finds out they're not there. And so he's following his father's directive, and he finally finds them. Now, off in the distance, his brothers see them, and they go, "Here comes that dreamer." When you get by that, they're still hurt by those dreams. Here comes that dreamer. And so then they start plotting and scheming. And they decide, we're going to kill him. We're going to throw him in this cistern, in this dry well, and we're going to kill him. We hate him so bad. And that's where hatred leads. And sometimes you get whipped up in that hatred, and you make it bigger than what it actually is. Sometimes it can drive you to do things that are so incredibly wrong that if you were in the right mind of thinking, you wouldn't do that at all. And sometimes it's group action that does that, where you work each other up into group action. And then it didn't happen here, but then if you add a little alcohol, a little drugs into it, then you see what goes on in our country all the time. Extreme violence and the harming of people. So they want to kill him. But the oldest brother, who may have been more like an uncle to Joseph than, you know, by age, he said, no, we can't kill him. We can't spill his blood. That's wrong. He knew that was wrong. And so then he leaves the scene, and his intention is to rescue him and take him back to his father, not necessarily, I would suggest to you, because Joseph was his favorite brother, but because he didn't want to spill innocent blood, and perhaps because it would be devastating to his father. So he comes back, and in the meantime, Judah had stepped up and said, no, let's not kill him. Here comes this band of traitors, let's sell him. I mean, that was okay to do in those days. You could sell people for slaves. So they decided to sell him. And in verse 35, they sell him to a caravan of Ishmaelites. Ishmaelites were the descendants of Esau. Esau was the brother of Jacob. These then were the people of Joseph's uncle, the Ishmaelites. You didn't know them that well, I suppose. But they got sold for 20 shekels of silver. By the way, a slave that was gored and you had to redeem him, the fee for that was 30 shekels of silver. So they sold him cheap. So Reuben comes back and he says, the boy isn't there. What happened? What am I going to do now? And at this point, so sometimes we get into this situation where we've done something that's wrong and that we're ashamed of. And then it comes to the point where you've got to do something different. You've either got to fess up to your sin or you've got to hide it. And sometimes then it's hard to take the medicine. You think, oh, I can hide this thing. Nobody will ever know it. And people get caught in that trap all the time. And then sometimes you have layers of covering up a sin. So sometimes you get yourself in deeper than what you ever thought you would be in. And that's what happened with them. So they decide this. Instead of going to their dad and said, Dad, we did a bad thing. We sold Joseph the dreamer to some Ishmaelites. We don't know where they're at, but we're sorry. Dad, we got to go find him. It probably would have been okay. But in all of this, what we have to understand and I should have probably said this earlier, is God is behind every bit of this. He didn't direct them to hate their brother. He didn't direct them to scheme to kill him. He didn't direct them to throw him in a pit and sell him to some slave traders. But his ultimate plan is to save his people. You can remember this then, that there's been a promise made to Abraham and repeated to Isaac and repeated to Jacob, and that through Abraham's seed, all nations would be blessed. That's going to happen. It's a fact. And Joseph, by the way, believed that. So, and I'm not sure that Joseph understands, and probably doesn't at this point, that God is behind all of this, but he will understand it later. So when we get to the point where you've got to either fess up to your sin or cover it up, they choose to cover it up, which is the wrong thing to do. So they take that coat and they tear it up and they kill a goat and they dip it in that goat's blood. And they go back to their daddy, and they didn't exactly lie to him. They said, look what we found. What do you think happened? But it is the same thing as lying, because they deceived their father. And the reaction of Jacob was, oh no, my son has been killed. And they could have corrected that, but they didn't do it. And so then Jacob tore his clothes, put on sackcloth, and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and daughters came to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. No, he said, I'm going to go to my grave in mourning. So his father wept for him. Of course, he's an old man at this point, right? And so you can just imagine then these brothers thinking, oh my goodness, what have we done? Look at our dad. He's so sorrowful and he's so crying, and we've done this horrible thing. We're in too deep now. We can't tell him. He's just going to have to be sorrowful and cry. But probably sorry for what they did, but not sorry enough to say, oh no, he's still alive. Let's go find him. So they lied to their father. Later on, as we'll see when it becomes revealed, and they come back to their dad and say, guess what? Joseph is alive. It's not in the text, but they had to explain that to their dad. That by this point, that probably would have been pretty hard. So Joseph is a slave. He's sold into slavery, and he's carried down to Egypt, which is where God wants his people, by the way. And he's sold to an official of the great Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, to an official named Potiphar. Okay? And so that's who they sold him to. And what we find then, as he's a slave, what is Joseph's attitude? Oh, I'm a slave. It's not, oh, I'm a slave and I shouldn't be here and it's not fair and just wallow in his misery. No, what happens is, the Lord was with Joseph, and he prospered. Joseph prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master, not in some outbuilding, not in the barn. When his master saw that the Lord was with him, that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. I want us to see this then, that Joseph, no matter what situation he found himself, he did the very best that he could do. He could have done far, far less, right? He could have. But he did he could have schemed against his master. He could have been trying to escape. He could have been trying to bribe people so he could get away from there. But he accepted his fate, and he did the very best that he could. And sometimes we find ourselves in situations like that too, right? Maybe a dead-end job, and we don't like our job, and so we don't do a very good job at our job. Or we don't like, maybe we're in a marriage, and she looked pretty good to begin with, but along the way somewhere, she kind of lost her shine in the husband's eyes, and unhappy in that marriage. And so not devote the time and the energy and the sacrifice that's needed, not only in a working relationship, but in a familial relationship, the husband-wife relationship. But that's not what happened with Joseph, right? But look what else happened here. Because of Joseph, what happened to Potiphar? everything that he had turned to gold, so to speak. So he was blessed. And get this then, that we may have a really good blessing in our work, in our congregation, and we may say, oh, that's because of what we're doing. But no, it might be because of Brother Avey right here, that God is blessing this congregation because of an individual like him or anybody else in this congregation. The same may be true in the workplace. And I've got some really good employees, and my business is because of them. In fact, my office manager says she loves our practice better than we do. And maybe she does. I don't know. But when you've got an employee that really loves things, then it can be a great blessing. But that's not what this is talking about. What this is talking about is God was with Joseph, and so somebody else prospered. Potiphar prospered. And that's a big thing to realize then, is that we just have to be faithful, and the blessings that we receive can be shared by those round about us. Get that? That's important. That's a key thing we need to think about. And so the whole household is blessed. But in that relationship, sometimes things go bad. And remember, Joseph is about 17 years old right now, right? The text said he was a good-looking man. And his form was good. And pretty soon, Potiphar's wife took notice of him. And what did she do? She started to want to be in a relationship with him, a sexual relationship with him that he shouldn't be. And Joseph refused that. And he said, my master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against Potiphar? No, that's not what it says. How could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? That's what it says. It would have been sin against Potiphar. But what Joseph said was, I will be sinning against my God. And I can't sin against my God. I value, that's the primary relationship. So I'm going to be true to God. And if I sin with this woman, I can't claim extenuating circumstances. And I had to sleep with her because, after all, she's the wife of my master. She commanded me to. No, it's wrong. And there's no way that he could justify it. He refused to go to bed with her or even to be in the same room alone with her. So here's a big lesson for us, you know, because you have this thing today that, sexual predators, so to speak, and the work environment where maybe men and women get closer to each other than they should be. And to protect ourselves and our relationship with God and the relationship with our wives, there's got to be some boundaries between how men and women interact with each other. Joseph knew that. Sometimes we forget it because we want to forget it. And we've got to realize this. We need to protect our relationship with God. And so she made this accusation against him. And finally, she got in a situation where she could tell a lie about him, and it was believable to her husband. And so her husband had him thrown into prison. So all of a sudden, Joseph's situation gets worse, right? He's a slave, but he gets to live in the master's house. He has some certain freedoms. And yet, he has this problem, gets thrown into jail. So what happens there? You know, do bad things happen? Does he complain? No. He does, again, the same situation. He does the best he can. And the warden, while Joseph was there in the prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So he became like the most valued trustee in the whole system. So eventually, Pharaoh sends some guys in there. And they're in prison because Pharaoh's unhappy. And they have some dreams. They want the interpretation of them. And I've got to accelerate this a little bit because we're running out of time. And so one guy, there's a bad interpretation. Another guy, and he gets killed. And the other guy, I think it's the butler, has a good interpretation. And Joseph tells him, when you get out of this prison, I want you to remember what I've done for you. But the guy didn't remember. And he didn't remember for 2 years. And the only reason that he did remember was Pharaoh had a dream and needed somebody to interpret it. So Pharaoh's servant said, well, there was this guy I knew back in jail, and he can interpret dreams. And so what happens then, the butler remembers Joseph. And so Pharaoh calls for Joseph, And so my point in this is no matter what your situation is, you do the very best that you can. That doesn't mean you lay it all on God and God's going to deliver me out of this, because Joseph is working to get out of that place through legitimate means. He tells the butler, I interpreted your dream. Please remember me. The butler doesn't do it. So people fail us sometimes. So Pharaoh calls for Joseph. What does Joseph do? Note this. When he had shaved and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. Joseph didn't think, oh, God's taking care of me. No, he knew he had his part to do. So he wanted to look presentable to Pharaoh. He shaved and changed his clothes. That's the same thing, brethren, we got to do today. Is don't say, oh, I'm the son of God. He's going to take care of me. You do your part also. And so Pharaoh tells him the dream. He interprets it as 7 years of famine, 7 years of plenty. But not only does Joseph interpret the dream, but he makes a recommendation to Pharaoh. He's really, really prepared for this. And he said after he interprets the dream, now let Pharaoh look for a discerning and wise man and put him in charge of the land of Egypt. He didn't suggest his own name. But he tells Pharaoh, you really need somebody on top of this. And then he gives Pharaoh the plan. And what this guy should do for the 7 years is collect all the food. And by the way, the storehouses were built to have all that grain during the 7 years of plenty. And then draw from them during the 7 years of famine. And so what does Pharaoh do? He, as we know, made Joseph that man. And it all played out like it was supposed to play out. What we find then is that the famine exists not only in Egypt, but also in Canaan, where his father and his brothers and all his family is. And this is in God's plan, right? God wanted those people down in Egypt to preserve them. And he takes this infant nation, the nation of Israel, and as God has always done, he's taken the weakest of humanity and made them great. Because Joseph, the second youngest son, becomes second in all of Egypt, which arguably is the greatest nation in that day and time. So small to big. Small nation of Israel, which is turned into the great nation of Israel because they had to be in Egypt for a while. So gave this advice and plan. And how old was Joseph when this happened? He was 30 years old. When he sold into slavery, he was 17 years old. So he's there in Egypt for 13 years. Not the most pleasant of years. He was in Potiphar's house. He was in prison. And even after he interpreted the dream of the butler, he's still in prison for 2 years, doing the best that he can. So sometimes God doesn't, we think we need out of this jail right now. And God is no longer with me. I'm going to quit serving God. That wasn't Joseph's deal. That wasn't his part. Because he valued his relationship with God, and no matter how many years it took, he was going to do exactly what he needed to do. So, he gives this plan. And by the way, he made Pharaoh rich, because he made those Egyptians during that second 7 years pay for that grain. And when they ran out of money, he said, don't you have cows and livestock? And when they paid all the cows and livestock for that grain, they said, we're out. We need food. And Joseph said, don't you have land? Can't you sell that? And so not only did he preserve the nation of Egypt, but all the assets of Egypt became property of Pharaoh. Again, Pharaoh blessed because of Joseph. So there comes a point then when Joseph's brothers come down from Canaan looking for food. They hear there's food. Joseph recognizes them. They don't recognize him. Eventually, he gets his father, through devious means somewhat, his father to come down and his younger brother. And then it's a great scene. And remember this, that when Jacob comes down to Egypt, he's 130 years old, which would put Joseph about 44 years old. He hadn't seen his dad for 27 years. He was 13 years a slave, and the other 14 years a second in command in Egypt. So eventually he reveals himself to his brothers, and they're sorrowful when he reveals himself. But look, a surprising thing happens. Then Joseph said to his brothers, come close to me. When they had done so, he said, I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed. Do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. By this point in his life, Joseph knew. But perhaps he didn't know when it was happening that this was all in God's plan. And brethren, as we are living and acting in this world, it all could be part, and is, a part of God's plan. Don't ever lose sight of that. Don't think of God as some far-off person that has a bare interest in us and letting time play out until the judgment day. No, God is active in our lives and active in this world, and everything that happens to us, God knows about, and we need to not grow weary of. So he forgives his brothers. Then after his dad dies, they get a little nervous, right? They said, what if Joseph holds a grudge against us? We've been protected because our dad was still alive. What if Joseph holds a grudge against us and pays us back for all the wrongs we did to him? So they sent a word to Joseph. Your father left these instructions, blah, blah, blah. When their message came, Joseph wept because he had truly forgiven them. And Joseph said, don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? You intended to harm me. And indeed they did. But God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done. They were still guilty of that. But Joseph knew that it was God's plan that he end up in Egypt. So a lot of times in our lives, people do things to us, right? Anybody here ever been threatened by their family and worried that you might be killed? I don't see any hands. Anybody here ever been sold into slavery? Again, I don't see any hands. But sometimes our families can be crippled through perceived insults and bad behavior. And so sometimes families are really just ripped apart because we can't get over that. And we maybe don't realize that God has a plan like he did for Joseph. Remember this, and no matter what situation we find ourselves, if we're being treated unfairly by some people that we love the most in the world, Joseph and his brothers, we can't let that change who we are. No matter how people treat us, we can't be incapacitated and crippled and hold a grudge and act like somebody who's not a Christian. We still have to, like Joseph, have to be the kind of people that we are. So he forgave his brothers. Now then, at the very end of this text, we see this. He says to his brothers, I'm about to die, but God will surely come to your aid and take you up out of this land to the land he promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He knew the promise. Joseph made the sons of Israel swear an oath and said, God will surely come to your aid, and then you must carry my bones from this place. Does that sound familiar to you? Ever heard that? Well, yeah. We didn't read it, but that's in Hebrews 11, verse 22. Let's take a look at it. Because this is in the chapter of the heroes of faith. And verse 22 says, by faith, Joseph, when his end was close, made mention of the departure of the children of Israel, even though it wouldn't happen for 400 years, and gave commandments concerning his bones. Joseph is listed in that hallmark of faithfulness because not because of all those other things that we've talked about, but because he knew what was going to happen in the future because he had faith in God. Faith in God. Because he knew and had confidence in God's promise. Even though he hadn't seen it, because remember the definition of faith, he hadn't seen it, hadn't experienced it. He knew that it would come. And that's important and it's relevant to those Jewish Christians not to fall back because you have to have patience for what God is unfolding for us, right? And that's relevant to us today, right? Sometimes people get tired of Christianity for whatever the reason. Sometimes they get tired of God and they think, oh, God's not taking care of me. I got a loved one that got sick. I prayed for something and I didn't get it. And I'm tired of this. I'm not doing it anymore. So it's relevant for us. If we're going to be saved, we have to have faith. And faith is patient. Faith believes. Faith believes in the promises of God. So then this morning, Larry's going to lead us in an invitation song. The purpose of that, I suppose, is if somehow you've been stirred by the words that we've read, and you realize this, that you've been living without faith, or that you've been living with a weak faith, and you let things impact you and influence you so that you're not behaving like Joseph behaved. So what these verses are about is becoming in a faithful relationship with God. And maybe you've never taken that first step of believing in Jesus Christ, the Son of God, and having your sins washed away in the waters of baptism. We're prepared to help you with that. If there's anybody in here like that. By the way, we've got some good news this week. Trey Sanchez was baptized. His mother's here this morning. That's a really good thing. So we're always make us happy to help you with that. And if, on the other hand, you realize these words have impacted you, God's words have impacted you, and you realize that you haven't met the mark of a hero of faith like Joseph, I pray that you would work hard at correcting that, setting the course straight. Why don't we all stand and sing? If anybody wants to be helped today, just come forward.